diary here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told, and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Thank you, Andy Offit Irwin. This is Fanny Crawford, welcoming you to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. We are broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia, as we do every Monday at noon. And I'm here with my co-host,
Stacy Okowski.
And we'll be here for the next hour. And our theme today is stories about not following the rules. But before we do that, I've just mentioned Andy Offit Irwin, and I wanted to say thank you for allowing us to use his original song, Tarry Here, for our opening most Mondays. And to say that Andy will be in the area. He'll be in Hagerstown, Maryland in June, and we'll talk more about that as we get into the program and talk about upcoming story performances. But right now, I think, Stash, you want to talk about this past week, don't you?
Yes. And it makes me sad when you announce that Andy's going to be here, because I can't be in the workshop that he's going to do.
I know. I'm sad about that, too. Yeah. Maybe we can get him. Maybe we'll get him to come visit you.
Oh, that'd be good. I'd treat him to ice cream.
I'll work on that.
That would be fun. Okay, well, here we are. Last week was pretty exciting. Actually, on Thursday night, Thursday evening, I did a science storytelling gig at the Sharpsburg Library, and it went very well. We even had a grandmother there, probably more than one. Maybe, but the kids really enjoyed everything, it seemed like. The librarian did, the grandma did, I certainly did, and the kids liked the stories, and we tried something new. I challenged the youngsters that were there in the library to write a story, kind of based on some of the things we had talked about, especially about the constellations, and that they would bring it back to the library and they would get a prize. And already two of those stories have come in. And that was within the library's not closed on, not open on Friday, but on Saturday morning, two of the stories showed up.
That is so cool.
That is really cool. That, you know, for kids to do something almost like a school assignment that wasn't a school assignment. And I was very pleased with that. And
your influence is spreading across the region, even as we speak. There are children scribbling down stories to share with you.
As long as parents don't think my influence is doing something. So also, I know you had a successful gig on Saturday. Do you want to say something about
A small audience, but I had a wonderful co-presenter, Karen James, who's a historian of African American history all over the region, recently retired from her official position in that capacity, but now doing it almost for free everywhere, or often for free, as the presentation on Saturday was. So she was talking about African-American history in Hagerstown from the early 1800s on. And some of the information she shared, I knew a bit about, but a lot of it was brand new to me. And she had copies of newspaper articles and wonderful anecdotes about a lot of people that we should all know more about. And I told stories from my great-grandfather, Thomas Henry Barnes, and answered questions from the audience, and heard from other people about some of their experiences in the area growing up. And all of that was fascinating to me, and I really enjoyed being on the program with Karen. And well, we hope to do something like that again in other places.
Sounds good. And yesterday, we were not storytelling, but we were both involved in a wonderful workshop with Adam Booth.
Who was telling stories.
Who was telling. And it was a working day to listen to Adam's work on a new story that he's been working on for quite some time.
Yes. And I think it's still a secret.
It is a
well,
secret.
I have no
I'm not
going
to say anything about the story.
But it is very exciting.
It was a very exciting, and actually it was much like an adventure in traveling through the words.
Yeah, and so. I learned a lot about the development of myths and storytelling linked to actual history.
Yes.
That Adam doesn't include that in the story, but that's part of the backstory that he's working with. And of course, it's always interesting watching Adam work and thinking about how he develops these incredible sagas,
right.
These hour-long single stories that he tells.
That are actually interesting.
Oh, really interesting. Very interesting.
Some people can tell a story for an hour and
put us all to sleep.
You can tell. Okay, so anything else you want to say about the past week?
Oh, that's about all I can remember from the past week.
Well, it's good to have you back in the studio.
Thank you.
Because it's not the same doing the show when you were on the phone.
It's not the same for me either, but yeah. We do have other lives outside of this one,
well,
which we occasionally need to remember.
But. That's true. Okay. And so, suppose, are you ready for us to jump in with the story?
Sure. You're going to tell one, I gather.
I am. I'm going to tell a story based on our theme of stories about not following the rules. And so here goes. This story has a title, The Dragons of Kompor. There are many legends in the sky. Since the beginning of time, people have told stories about what they saw when they looked up and watched the stars. Some of the peoples have especially noticed three groups of stars in the northern sky. Here is a story of these star groups told by the wise men of a tribe of the Canadian Northlands. A long, long time before the people walked the land, there were many animals on the earth. This was a time when the unicorns were still alive. These beautiful, magical creatures filled the heart of man with wonder and a sense of peace. There were also many fearsome creatures, such as the great dragons of Kompor. The dragons breathed fire and could knock down trees with the wind created by their wings. When the Maker of all decided to put men and women on the earth, he believed that all of his creatures would be able to live together and share the goodness and abundance on the land and in the seas. At first, this was true. There was so much food that no one was ever hungry, and all the creatures were able to live as they always had. At that time, men and women appeared on the land fully grown. There were no children. The Maker of all told the men and women they would always have everything they needed to be happy, as long as they didn't interfere with the way the other creatures lived. One day, a man by the name of Kaju entered a cave where many bears had lived. No man had ever been in a bear's cave, and what he found amazed him. There was a place in the cave where he saw what he thought were statues of bears. Silently, he went to that part of the cave and he discovered that they weren't statues at all. What he saw were bears that were covered by a crystal-like coating. They looked as if they were encased in ice. As he walked around the cave, he saw that some of the statues were a bit larger and didn't look like bears at all. They looked like a different creature. He couldn't see them clearly because the ice-like covering was very thick. For many days, the man returned to the cave, and finally he began to live there so he could study the statues. At first, he only looked at them up close and tried very hard to see through their covering, but then something happened to make him want to open one of the coverings. One day, a Kompor dragon flew to the cave and crawled into the opening. The dragon touched many of the statues with its wings and then left. Kaju wanted to look inside the coverings. He had questions. Why was the dragon interested in bears? The dragon returned every day for the time it took the moon to become full and then to disappear. With each passing day, Kaju became more and more curious. He began to follow the dragon, and finally he was able to see the great creature enter a valley that was hidden from view by a thick forest. He entered the valley quietly, and what he saw took his breath away. There was an animal such as he or no other man had ever seen. It was half dragon and half bear. And then he saw another creature that was almost all bear, with just a few features of a dragon. Kaju left the valley and returned to the cave of the statues. He sat and thought for a long time. After a few days, Kaju realized the dragon had stopped coming to the cave of the statues. He made another trip to the hidden valley. He found no more of the dragon creatures. He found no more of those strange creatures that seemed to be half bear and half dragon. Now there were only great bears in the valley. He studied on this problem. He began to realize what he had discovered. He believed that he had learned why no one ever saw bears that were of a medium size. The only bears people ever saw were little bears or big bears. Kaju raced to the cave and took up some large rocks and began to smash them against one of the larger crystal-like statue enclosures. He hit it harder and harder, and finally it cracked, and the thing inside fell over. Inside the covering was another of those coverings, and there was another dragon. There was moaning sounds, and then the dragons were still. They were dead. What he saw told him that he had discovered the secret. Small bears turned into dragons, and dragons turned into great bears. Kaju ran from the cave to go to his village and tell someone. And just then, the skies became dark. There was lightning and thunder, and he heard the voice of the maker of all. "You have interfered with the bear and dragon, Kaju. No longer will they be as they were. The dragons are gone forever. And you have caused this. From this time on, humans will have to begin life as babies, like the little bears. They will grow and become as the dragons were, with great energy and desires that are hard to control. And then they will have to be patient and learn to wait until they are able to become adults, as the great dragon waited until it became a great bear. Life will be harder for humans, and there will be a reminder to them for all time. I will place the young bear and the dragon and the great bear in the sky, and there they will walk in a circle for all time to remind humans of what you have done." And so, if we look at the northern sky at night, we can see the little bear and the great bear walking backwards and looking at the dragon who follows them around and around the sky for all time.
Ah, so that's the story of where the dragon and the bear came from.
Yes.
This is your own story. This is that different is than some others.
Different than some others. And I wrote that story when I was the director of a planetarium at a private school. And some of the tales that were told about the constellations, many of those that are regarded as the tale, are based on Greek and Roman mythology. And I wanted to write stories for the younger children that would appeal to them. Not many first, second, and third graders, and maybe even the fourth, fifth, and sixth graders relate to the myths about the Roman gods and the Greek gods. And so I tried to do some stories that would be more relevant to the young children.
When you started the story, I think you said that this story came from a northern group of ancient people. Is that what
yes,
you said?
I created a tribe called the Terlesta Tribe of the Canadian Northlands.
Terlesta?
Yes.
Of the Canadian Northlands?
Right.
And where did that name, the Dragons of Kampur, come from?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. For a lot of the things I've written that are stories for the kids I worked with in drama, with younger kids, I found that I liked names and of places and people that had HR in them. And so over a period of time, I had a collection of many words that ended in HR or had HR in the beginning someplace. And so I just made up the name. I like dragons, and Kampur seemed like a neat name, at least to me.
Wow. Well, that was a fascinating story. And I like the interfering man, Kaju, and his impact on his long line, his species.
Right. Yes, he didn't follow the rules.
Yes, and that is our theme today.
Yes.
So you're right on target.
Oh, hooray.
Well, I should tell our listeners that this is the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org out of Bolivar, West Virginia. Of course, we're an internet community-based radio station, and every Monday at 12 noon, we tell stories.
Yes.
And we also have a podcast system set up. So if people want to hear things that we've told in the past, or you want to hear this program again, you can go to talltales.enlightenradio.org.
And you can find many, many programs there.
Yeah. And now people can be primed to listen for HR words in your original compositions. So what do you want to do next?
Well, I think now we would be an appropriate time for you to mention stories in the round.
Oh, okay.
And give us an update on that.
All right.
And
well, today is Stories in the Round Day, of course. This is April 23rd. I don't think I said that at the opening of the show. 2018. And our storyteller this month for April, this evening at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Hagerstown, will be our beloved teller and mentor, Susan Gordon. And Susan's been working on a number of new projects. She's going to tell some new animal stories, and she's going to share a bit of a novel that she's been working on about a woman who lives in the lumber camps, or coal camps, of West Virginia at the beginning of the 20th century. And we heard a little report from her yesterday at her mm-hmm. house on the research that she's doing. And I'm hoping she shares a little bit of that story because that was pretty interesting. And since she just experienced that this past weekend, it's always really interesting to hear a story for the very first time. You hear things and get to know things about the teller that get ironed out over time as that story gets told again and again. But she was so excited about everything she learned on that trip and the people that she met.
And I will never hear the name Cadillac again without being able to immediately jump to Susan's description of riding in a certain Cadillac.
Long black Cadillac, yes. So that's, we actually opened Stories in the Round series last month in March, but we didn't do an actual telling. You and I, Stosh, you will remember.
We were telling.
Did a two-person play, Love Letters by A.R. Gurney.
Right.
And so this is actually the first teller. Our opening teller for the season will be Susan this evening at 7 o'clock. And any of these sessions that I'm about to tell about, you can get more information, listeners, by calling me, Fanny Crawford, at 301-730-1638, 301-730-1638, or you can email me at fanitsky@hotmail.com, F-A-N-I-T-S-K-Y @hotmail.com. And you might want to do that because if you register in advance, you get a bit of a discount. So we're $10 in advance, $12 at the door. And today will be the last time that season's tickets are available for the fifth season of Stories in the Round, of which tonight is the second session.
It's a great bargain.
Yeah, and you get a discount if you buy your season's ticket today. Next month in May, we have Kevin Cordy coming from Ohio to tell a variety of stories. And Kevin tells for children and for adults, but he will be focusing on mature audiences, I guess, except that children over 12 are always welcome at Stories in the Round if they're accompanied by a parent or guardian or a group leader. If somebody wants to bring a whole passel of children over the age of 12, we would welcome that. And Kevin is also doing a workshop that's open to the public the day before his session. The date?
May 27th for the workshop.
Thank you. I did not bring my calendar out as I set up all my papers for this program. And so the workshop is on Sunday and Stories in the Round is on Monday.
Right.
And again, if you want more information, would like to come to that storytelling workshop with Dr. Kevin Cordy, you're welcome to do that. Even people brand new to storytelling are welcome. There will be many experienced tellers at that event, but we're inviting everybody, and Kevin Cordy is completely comfortable with that mix. In fact, I think he revels in bringing together people with different backgrounds.
Yes, he does.
And experiences. And then in June, Andy Offit Irwin, who actually kicked off this program today because we use his original song, Tarry Here, as our opening most Mondays. And Andy will be telling on June, it's actually the third Monday of the month rather than the fourth as we usually do, because Andy was only available the third Monday of that month, and we wanted him to come.
June 18th.
Thank you, Stosh.
You're welcome.
And Andy will also be doing a workshop beforehand, but I think that one is already booked solidly.
Yes.
And of course, Andy was here last summer for Stories in the Round, and I just had an email exchange with him, and he's going to do a follow-up story to Sister True, which was the story that he did last year, as well as some other shorter stories, he's promised. In July, we have Magid Melvin Medelitz coming from Philadelphia, who tells stories in the Judaic tradition, stories that illustrate or explicate the Talmud and the Torah. And he is an ordained Maggid. He's also an old friend of my family's, and I know him as a very talented storyteller. He was a public school teacher, and as Stash can tell us, storytelling definitely helps in the classroom.
Yes.
But beyond that, Melvin Medelitz became an ordained Maggid so that he could tell stories from his Jewish roots. And there will be more tellers in August and September and October and November and December, but that's all we're going to tell you about right now.
Right. We don't want to cloud your mind with too much information.
Cloud my mind with too much information.
So, well, you just did a lot of talking, but that's okay.
Well, that's what we do on this show.
Right.
And occasionally we sing, but hardly ever.
Oh, I look forward to the next time.
Well, I don't think you have sung any songs on this show.
Probably not. Someday, maybe I will.
Okay.
Oh,
you could play the accordion, actually.
Once it gets fixed. The accordion right now has a drone in it. There's a note that plays constantly. and unfortunately, it is not a note that fits with anything I would do.
I was going to say, for people who don't like accordion and bagpipes, which I love accordion and I love bagpipes, right. So you will never hear me say anything about droning. Right. But I have heard other people say, well, how can you tell it's broken?
Yeah. But in my experience, anytime I've used my accordion in storytelling, once I begin, people in the audience, not only little children, especially the little children, but even adults will begin to bounce. It happened to me in Pittsburgh while I was on stage at the Three River Storytelling Festival. And it was so astounding to see an entire row of women begin bouncing that I almost stopped to compliment them in the story, but I didn't. It was amazing. I did mention something to them afterwards.
There was, I just saw in the Hagerstown paper, there was a polka festival someplace in Pennsylvania, I think, not far away. I should have cut out that article and given it to you.
Yes, I would like to have seen that. There are lots of polka festivals.
Well, most of this article was about the food at the polka festival, but I should have saved it.
So, are you ready to tell us a story?
Sure. It must be time for another story. This is a story I think I've told on the air before, but not for a long time. So, it's on the theme of breaking rules. And the title is Wicked.
I'm excited already.
Most days, I remember myself as a perfect child. I know I was a wild and wicked teenager. The spring of my senior year in high school, I was just 16. I'd just broken up with my first serious boyfriend, had received a scholarship to the college of my choice, and I was working after school 3 or 4 days a week in Philadelphia Center City at a sandal making shop that was operated by genuine hippies. As you might guess, this was 1967. You might guess that the late 60s. My mother, on the other hand, was 50 some. She was managing the library archives for Temple University and continuing the political activism that she practiced all her adult life, from fighting fascism as a WAC in the U.S. Army during World War II, as a formerly Jewish lady living in a poor West Philly neighborhood, agitating for the rights of African Americans, trying to integrate restricted white Philadelphia neighborhoods, to writing articles and speeches on the responsibilities of libraries in the context of civic unrest, FBI surveillance, sexism, racism, and censorship. That was my mother. Our mother-daughter conflicts were set in sociological and political frameworks, in arguments about my evening social activities. Her closing statement was, "There is a curfew in this town." Translation, "We do not get arrested on curfew violations for frivolous activities like folk dancing or listening to banjo players in coffee houses." One evening, when I was folk dancing on the Stone Square in front of the Philadelphia Art Museum. Do you remember the Stone Square at the Philadelphia Art Museum?
I don't think I've ever been there.
Did you see the movie Rocky?
Oh, right. Okay.
Yes. We're on the same page.
Of course I saw the movie Rocky.
Okay, so folk dancing with 200 of my nearest and dearest friends. I heard about a party that some of these friends would be going to at a farmhouse outside the city, outside Philadelphia, starting on a Friday afternoon with music and dancing, communal meals, and camping out under the stars. This was a huge deal, an annual event, even, at the home of older friends of my friends. Everyone would be there. Everyone had always been there. Only I had been left out. I knew that family negotiations worked better one-on-one. My dad was an expert at choosing his battles, both politically and on the domestic front. And he always made it clear, but especially this time, that it was my mother I needed to win over. And Mom was implacable. I listed the academic, genealogical, spiritual, and political credentials of the hosts of this party. She didn't care. Her 16-year-old daughter would be attending no overnight co-ed group campouts. Late in the conversation, I realized I needed a plan B. My first jailbreak was the only logical response. I had heard stories from friends of kids thrown out of the house for adolescent defiance, but the story most credible to me came from Mom. Just a couple years before this, one afternoon, right after I started at Brooklyn College, your 16-year-old Aunt Irene, my younger sister, went out for a quart of milk and ran into some friends on their way to a party. She didn't come home for 24 hours. Your Grandpa Joe locked her out of the house for 2 years. This was 1933, 34, the Depression. Irene stayed with friends, but had to drop out of high school and take any miserable dead-end job she could find. But now it's 1967. I found my sleeping bag, packed a change of clothes, a toothbrush, and a separate bag with food, and called a banjo player I knew. When he picked me up Friday afternoon, I mentioned that my parents would see this excursion as an act of defiance. But that didn't seem to bother the banjo player. I relaxed and vowed to enjoy myself. The gathering was exactly as promised. Maybe 75 people were there, most under 25 years old. The farmhouse was huge and beautiful. Some totally empty rooms and many outdoor acres to explore. About dinner time, I found the big, heavy, black, airplane plastic rotary dial phone in the farmhouse and called home. Mom answered. I told her that I was at the party, that I was fine, and would be home Saturday afternoon. I was vague about where I was. To this day, I do not know exactly where I was. There was a long silence on the other end of the phone. And then Mom said, "I'll see you tomorrow." I hung up thinking, well, that went well. The evening passed with a small circle of friends eating dinner around a campfire at the edge of a pond. I went to sleep about 11 in a big common room of the farmhouse inside my sleeping bag with 20 or 30 other bagged people. Morning was more of the same, breakfast from our pooled knapsacks, more talking, laughing, and music. And about dusk, somebody dropped me at my too quiet house. My dad greeted me in the kitchen. "You've really upset your mother. You need to talk to her." I walked down the long, dim hallway to my parents' bedroom and knocked. Mom called, "Come in." There was a small lit lamp by the door, but most of the room was dark. Mom had been, folding clothes or some kind of housekeeping chores. And when she turned to look at me, I could see that she'd been crying. Now she locked eyes with me and said, "If anyone asks, I don't have a daughter anymore." Whew. I thought about that for a minute, maybe two. Her words were harsh enough to be a slap in the face, but they were kind of abstract and a bit theatrical. They weren't concrete. They didn't scare me. And I said, with wicked 16-year-old nonchalance, "Okay," and turned and went up to my room. Late in the evening, my dad came upstairs to say, "You've turned this family upside down. It will take a while for you to make this right." Well, I believed I was right. I never apologized. On the one hand, I was sorry to see my mother distressed. On the other hand, I had an inalienable right to independence. Weeks later, arguing about something I wanted and my mother refused, I put my hands on my hips and said, "I thought you said you didn't have a daughter anymore." Across the kitchen, she turned to face me and said, "Fanny, when I said that, I was very upset. The reality is, if you live in this house, you follow our rules." I had no answer. I was there only a couple more months, and then off to Chicago and college, home for just a day or two of university holidays, and then off to visit friends, Boston, San Francisco, Europe. From Chicago on, Mom treated me as an adult. We respected each other's sociological and political frameworks, and I was careful not to turn the family upside down. Mom died in 2011, 94 years old, a rabble-rousing warrior woman to the end. I miss her every day. She taught me to stand up for a principle. If her principles were loftier than mine, she also showed me that I can occasionally break the rules.
Wow. I could hear your mother. Even though I never met your mother, I could hear that. I could hear the mother's voice.
I hear my mother inside my head every day.
And I understand that perfectly. My mother passed away a long time ago, in 1962, and I don't think a day goes by that I don't think of her. And sometimes, scarily.
They do have a big impact on us, don't they?
Yes. Yes, especially since we have a habit of, when we're young, we've probably both have a habit of thinking we knew a little bit better than those old people.
Or a lot better.
Wow. That is really a wonderful story about breaking the rules. And actually, I thought you were going to get much worse. Your mother showed great restraint.
Well, one of the things I learned from that experience is that she really didn't want to know the details. And I learned that I didn't want to share them.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. My mother was pretty much the opposite. She wanted to know exactly what I was doing and why. And pretty much started the conversation with me knowing that I was wrong in her mind. No matter what I was doing was wrong. And the reason was definitely wrong.
Yeah, my family was about defending your stand, your experiences. So you could be wrong, but if you had thought it through and could offer even a bit wacky explanations, you got some credit for that. You might not get what you wanted, but you could earn points by being able to defend yourself. So
I think I would have liked your family. I liked my family too, but I think I would have liked your mom.
Your mother was a formidable woman.
Absolutely.
And I would have loved to meet your mother, but probably would have enjoyed it most as a fly on the wall if I wasn't in her sights.
Yes. She was a very demanding person as far as what went on in her house and what her son did, at least this son.
I would not have wanted to have to explain to her why I wanted to be friends with you or what I thought my positive influence was or anything like that. I imagine she would have had no truck with any of that if I didn't fit the model of a young lady that she thought was suitable for fraternizing with her son.
My mother didn't want her son fraternizing with young ladies at all.
At all, yeah.
She was bent on my vocation to the priesthood, which was only in her mind, not mine.
I had forgotten about that in this conversation.
Yes.
But that alone would have made me afraid of her.
Yeah. I still have a queasy stomach thinking about trying to explain to her how I became engaged on the Christmas Eve when I was 17 years old.
No.
And my father enjoying my terror so much and not helping at all.
Well, he knew it was going to work out fine in the end. He knew you well enough to know you would prevail, but it was entertainment.
It sure was. It sure was. Well, you're listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org, coming to you from Bolivar, West Virginia. And at this time, I think an update on the Speak Story series in Shepherdstown, West Virginia would be appropriate.
I think you're right.
Okay. And I think you would like me to do that.
Certainly would.
Okay.
I've just been talking a whole lot.
I know.
And probably a change of voice would be helpful.
Oh, okay. Well, just this month, which is April, Motoko was at Stories and at Speak Story Series in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, Shepherd University. And although I was not able to attend that, I have heard wonderful things about her performance and how much it was enjoyed by everybody.
She was charming and really fun to listen to and very, very funny. She was telling mostly comic tales. And
That's good.
Quite enjoyable.
In May 8th, Robert Kikuchi Ngojo will be doing a program of Asian Tales of Wisdom and Woe, and the title of the program is Between Shadow and Light. And Robert is one of the founders of the group Ethnotech, which performs throughout the country and abroad, bringing music using many interesting instruments and stories. In June, Scott Whitehair from the Chicago area will be doing some personal tales. And Scott is a producer of a storytelling venue called This Much Is True, and also an open mic venue with the title of Do Not Submit. And I would love to attend one of those.
We should make a road trip to Chicago sometime.
Right. That is funnier than you can imagine. July 10th, W. Thomason, a Native American storyteller, who will, I'm sure, delight us with stories under the title of How the West Was Spun. W. is the revered storyteller in the United States and has traveled also across the world telling her stories. August 14th, Corinne Stavish will be telling a story about the people of Denmark and how they managed to save so many of the Jews during the Second World War. And the story is entitled When Good People Do Something. September 11th, the grand old, I shouldn't say that. I said grand old man before, but actually Donald Davis, a bit younger than I am, and one of the best storytellers. And Donald works very hard at his craft and tells delightful personal tales about growing up and his experiences, even when he was a minister. He was a Methodist minister until he retired and became one of the most popular storytellers in the country. October 9th, Linda Gorham. She tells twisted fairy tales and uses unconventional humor. And I really look forward to hearing her because I love twisted fairy tales.
I did hear her at Jonesboro last year. Yeah. She was very good.
I never get enough of that. And I've experienced that the young children really love twisted fairy tales. Children, even as young as 5 years old, they know a lot of the things about Cinderella. And when they hear the name Rindicella, they will go into fits.
and those of us who have never quite grown up.
I think I just pegged myself.
I was speaking of myself, actually. Oh, okay. But you're welcome to join the club.
November 13th, Megan Wells. She will tell classical tales, tales from classical literature and some very old tales. And she was mesmerizing last year at Jonesboro.
Yes.
I was absolutely smitten by her incredible telling. So let's see. Now, so.
Do you have another little story?
I think we have time. I do have a little story. I have a little story from what I mentioned before about the classical tales. Mm-hmm. This is a short version of the story about following the rules and how costly it can be when you don't follow the rules. Hades and Persephone were the gods in the underworld, who took care of the underworld where all the dead people reside. And a woman by the name of Eurydice had passed away and was in the underworld. And Orpheus loved her so much and was despondent. And finally he traveled to the underworld and played his music. And it enchanted Hades and Persephone so much, and it pleased them so much, his sincerity and the beautiful music that he shared, that Hades said he would allow Eurydice to leave the underworld and go with Orpheus. And they should leave, but that they should not look back. And Orpheus was thrilled with this wonderful gift. And so he and Eurydice began to leave. And they started, they had to walk a path and cross the river and walk some more to get to the gate of the underworld. And Orpheus was leading the way. He passed through the gate of the underworld and knew that he was free. And not waiting for his love to pass through the gate, he turned to see. And with that, she was whisked back to the underworld. He hadn't followed the rules. They were both supposed to leave Hades' underworld and not look back. And she hadn't left completely yet. So not following the rules cost him his love, even when he was given a second chance.
It is hard not to look back.
Oh, terrible. And there are a number of stories in many places about that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
In the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Lot looked back, and it always bothered me that about that story. His wife turned to stone. I always think, what if it rained?
Turned to salt.
Turned to salt.
Turned to salt, yes.
Right. That's right. It wouldn't matter if it rained on the stone.
Well, so. Acid rain these days does have an impact.
But in the old days, the rain was probably pretty pure. So
I like to tell that's I don't tell that story very often. But when I talk about those characters in the story, I like to call Orestes' love Eurydice, because my first real exposure to that story from an adult perspective came from the French film.
Oh.
And that's who she is in the film. And that just seems like a wonderful, wonderful name.
Well, pronouncing names from different languages has always been one of my really, what should I say? I don't want to say weak points.
You
definitely
do it
not
so well.
Strong points.
You're just anxious about it,
well,
but you manage
and,
fine.
And I tend to pronounce things the way English would pronounce them, the English language.
That makes sense.
Yes, since I was raised in the English language. But sometimes it can be very embarrassing. I have a little anecdote I would like to share about mispronouncing. Back in the 80s, there was a terrible tragedy in the Soviet Union with a nuclear...
Yes, of course.
...site. And I came into my chemistry class, and I said, before we begin the chemistry today, I wonder if any of you would like to share any kind of news about Chernobyl. And a young man who I really liked then and still do, I'm even on Facebook with him, a young man who was on my track team, a very good runner, solid guy, by the name of Dario Clark, erupted in laughter and looked me straight in the eye and said, it's pronounced Chernobyl. And I knew there was no way I could recover and pretend I was making fun of the name. And I think I spent the rest of that morning glowing pink.
Oh,
it was
thing you liked this
oh,
kid.
Oh yeah. Well, and he didn't do it to be mean. He was he was correcting his coach.
It is funny if you have that sense of humor and you're comfortable enough to laugh at your teacher.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, he was good. In fact, his name was Dario, and I pick up on names quickly, and I like to play with letters, and so for a while I called him Radio, because the same letters spell his name as
I'm
radio.
Sure he loved that.
And he did. And for a while, it was a good joke between us because he was always, I called him radio because he was always broadcasting. and he took it well. But I stopped after a short while because no one likes to have their name made fun
right.
of.
Right. Yes. Funny's funny, and then you move on.
That's right. That's right. It's like,
well, we are at the end of our time,
I see.
I believe.
I believe we're very close, if not at the end.
I did want to mention our podcast one more time,
right.
tawtales.enlightenradio.org, if you want to listen to past shows or hear this one again.
And maybe we could promote next week's program.
Okay, we can. Do we know what we're doing next week?
I think so. We at least talked about it, and okay. I'd like to pursue it.
Okay.
I think neighborhoods.
We did talk about that, now that you remind me.
And you grew up in Philadelphia,
In Philadelphia,
right?
A city of neighborhoods. They always say Baltimore is a city of neighborhoods, but Philadelphia is too.
I'm sure Philadelphia must be, because I grew up in Baltimore, and my neighborhood... although I am very familiar with my childhood neighborhood, I've learned over the past few years that there are other adults that I've met who didn't grow up in Baltimore who are fascinated by my neighborhood. You know, and I've even been gently accused of imagining my neighborhood, that I really didn't live in a place that I've described, but I did.
And you lived right close to Patterson Park, is that right?
I did.
Yeah, I don't know your neighborhood, but I do know Patterson Park, so.
Four blocks.
That'll be a great
Patterson
show.
Park. And I spent many, many, many hours in that park doing all kind of things.
Yeah, well, I had a similar park because Fairmount Park covers a large part of the city of Philadelphia, and we lived right across the street, so... We're going to have some interesting stories next
absolutely.
Week. Absolutely. All right.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, take us out then.
I will take us out. Let's see. I can't take us out with that because it doesn't mean anything. All right. This is Stasz Ziolkowski and...
Fanny Crawford.
Your co-host for the Noontime Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org. Independent community radio in Bolivar, West Virginia. Closing out this week's show. The Epic Storytelling Hour offers listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional storytellers, encouraging our listening community to share, preserve, and expand all of our stories. Thanks for listening. Don't forget about the program at the
Unitarian Universalist Church of Hagerstown.
Right, at 13245 Sear Foss Pike.
And you see, you can remember the numbers and not the words, the religious words. Theological words.
Yes, the scary words. Stay tuned for Okie from Muskogee coming up.
All right.